The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and also from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. This is from the July 2023 issues. And the first thing I'm going to do is finish up an article I was reading previously, which is called Menopause Marketing, Hype Versus Truth, and talks about skin care products. Estrogen fuels the production of oil and other substances that moisturize and protect the skin. When levels drop, skin can't hold moisture as effectively, leading to dryness, dullness, and irritation. Estrogen decline also coincides with the diminishing production of collagen, a type of protein that makes skin firmer. Beyond that, many women in perimenopause and beyond develop a new or worsening case of rosacea, a chronic inflammatory skin condition marked by redness and rashes that usually arises on the nose and cheeks. Dr. Kourosh says, why now? Because flushing related to hot flashes causes tiny blood vessels in the face to dilate or makes redness more obvious. But over-the-counter skin creams typically can't make a big dent in rosacea symptoms. Only medications or in-office procedures like laser treatments can. Skin care is only going to take you so far, she notes. This is also true for anti-aging products in general. Most of the changes our face registers over decades, wrinkles and sagging among them, are treatable but not preventable. We can slow it down but not stop it, says Dr. Kourosh, who, by the way, is a dermatologist at Massachusetts General. Some of these forces are going to happen no matter what. Working with a trusted dermatologist through the process can help women navigate more smoothly. Nothing will turn back the clock, but certain active ingredients in beauty products can confront aging skin's biggest nemesis. Broad-spectrum sunscreen is a product in its own right, but also is incorporated into many moisturizers and foundations. Sun exposure speeds up chronic skin aging and leads to age spots. Alpha hydroxy acids exfoliate dead skin cells and reveal smoother skin underneath. Retinols and retinoids are forms of vitamin A. They ramp up skin cell turnover, combating fine lines and sun damage. Hyaluronic acid draws water to the skin and traps it in cells to retain moisture. Ceramides strengthen the skin's barrier to keep moisture from escaping. Moisturizers improve skin smoothness, softness, and flexibility. Common individual ingredients include glycerin, shea butter, aloe vera, and various natural oils like coconut, sunflower seed, jojoba, tea tree, and grape seed. While using these ingredients can't hurt, don't expect menopause miracles no matter what a label says, Dr. Kourosh says. Unlike medications, the FDA doesn't approve over-the-counter skincare products before they're sold. I'm not aware of skincare products that are going to be game changers for the problem of menopause, she says. They may help a little bit, but they contain the same anti-aging ingredients that people use throughout adulthood. And while certain skincare products like retinols and moisturizers can be helpful, they're not necessarily going to do the trick for everyone. If you're perusing skincare shelves and considering menopause skincare products, Harvard experts offer two main pieces of advice. First, cast a critical eye. Examine the product's ingredients rather than its claims. Does it contain something different from what you're already using? Until someone proves that the needs of middle-life women's skin are different, and designs a product that meets these needs in a different way than for younger women, and no one has done that, to the best of my knowledge, you should probably stick with products you used in the past and not pay more for the same thing. If you found a moisturizing cream that works well for a long time, there's no reason to now buy one whose label says it's perfect for menopause. Also, you should get back to basics. Include skincare in your self-care regimen. But nothing is better for maintaining your skin and overall vitality than getting adequate sleep, staying hydrated, and working with the dermatologist to target your individual needs, Dr. Korosh says. Now I'm going to go back to the Harvard Health Letter. This is the July 2023 issue, which we began reading earlier. Now I'm going to go over some news briefs. And the first is a Harvard study which says ditching sugary drinks is tied to reduced diabetes complications. People with diabetes are generally advised to avoid sugary drinks to help control their blood sugar. A Harvard study published online April 19, 2023 by the British Medical Journal shows that avoiding sugary drinks also is linked to dramatically lowering risks for cardiovascular disease and early death. Researchers evaluated an average of 18.5 years of health data from more than 15,000 middle-aged and older adults with diabetes who reported what they drank. Compared with people who drank coffee, tea, low-fat milk, or water, people who drank sugary drinks like sugary soda, fruit punch, or lemonade had much higher health risks, up to 20% higher for early death, 25% higher for developing cardiovascular disease, and 29% higher for cardiovascular-related death. Replacing just one daily sugar-sweetened drink with a non-sugary one caused an 18% reduced risk of early death and a 24% reduced risk of cardiovascular-related death. Even drinking artificially sweetened beverages in lieu of sugary drinks was associated with an 8% lower risk of death from all causes and a 15% lower risk of cardiovascular death. This study was observational and can't prove conclusively that avoiding sugary drinks will bring these health benefits in people with diabetes, but it builds on extensive evidence linking sugary drink consumption to chronic disease and early death in people without diabetes, so it is plausible. Now here's another interesting news brief, again from the Harvard Health Letter. Can a smartwatch detect early risks for certain heart problems? Smartwatches can do more than just check texts and emails or track your steps and heart rate. Many of the devices measure the electrical activity of your heart, similar to an electrocardiogram that you get in a doctor's office. Those tests in clinical settings measure electrical activity from 12 different points on the body for about 10 to 15 seconds. But smartwatches measure activity from just one spot. Is that enough to detect heart problems? Possibly, suggests an analysis published online February 3, 2023 by the European Heart Journal. Scientists asked 83,000 healthy people aged 50 to 70 to undergo one lead 15-second EKGs that mimicked a smartwatch EKG and then followed their health for up to 11 years. After analyzing the recording, scientists found that people whose EKGs showed a type of extra heartbeat called premature ventricular contractions were more likely to later develop heart failure. People with another type called premature atrial contractions were more likely to develop atrial fibrillation. Smartwatches are expected to become increasingly useful in spotting early signs of heart problems. Finally, again from Health Briefs, from the Harvard Health letter of July 2023, even a little socializing is linked to longevity. Among its many health benefits, socializing is tied to reduced risk of early death. But how much socializing might it take to live longer? Maybe just a little, suggests a large Chinese study that was published online March 6, 2023, by the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Scientists evaluated the health, lifestyle habits, and self-reported social activity of more than 28,000 people whose average age was 89, whose survival was tracked for an average of 5 years, or until death. Within the first 5 years, the more people socialized, the longer they lived. Each of the following groups lived longer than the one before it: those who socialized occasionally, monthly, weekly, or every day. People in any of these groups lived longer than those who did not socialize at all. But after 5 years, it appeared that only people who socialized daily clearly lived longer than the others. This is an observational study and can't prove cause and effect. The authors didn't analyze the different types of social activity people took part in, but we know there are many important reasons to socialize, including links to lower risks for loneliness and isolation, dementia, and chronic disease. So set a goal to increase your social activity, like calling a friend or getting together with one. Now, here's another useful article from the Harvard Health Letter. This is the July 2023 issue, and it's called Protect Your Skin from Serious Burns. It takes only a moment to suffer a burn at home. It can be simple as brushing against a sizzling skillet on the stove or getting into a bath that's too hot, a particular risk for people with decreased sensation in their feet. Understanding common causes of burns can help you to prevent them, and learning what to do immediately if they happen is crucial. There are several common causes of burns, particularly in older people, and most are clearly preventable, says Dr. Colleen Ryan, a staff surgeon at the Sumner Redstone Burn Center at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital and Shriners Children's Boston. Here are some examples. Explosions. Explosions are common among people who smoke while using a home oxygen tank. Clothes that catch fire. This often occurs when someone wears sleeves reaching over a flame on a gas stove. For years, it was a leading cause of death in women admitted to our hospital with burns. Now it occurs in men, too. Hot water scalds. You can be burned by hot tap water in about 3 seconds if your water heater is set at 140, or 25 seconds if it's set at 130, but it takes 9 minutes if the temperature is set at 120. A study published online by the journal Injury Prevention found that from 2016 to 2018, such scalds caused more than 52,000 visits to the emergency room and killed more than 100 people. Fires at home. These might be caused by unattended candles or carelessness while smoking. Burn classifications. Doctors describe burns based on how deep they penetrate the skin surface. First-degree burns are considered superficial. They involve only the top layer of skin, are red and painful, and clear up in a few days. The epidermis can regenerate, so if it's injured, it can fully regenerate and doesn't scar. For example, a sunburn is usually a first-degree burn. Second-degree burns look like first-degree burns, but then develop blisters. The burns involve both the epidermis and the deeper layer of the skin called the dermis, and are very painful while they're open and exposed to air. They take longer to heal and are replaced with scar tissue. A third-degree burn occurs when the epidermis and dermis are destroyed. This is common in delicate areas like the back of the hand. The burnt area itself is painless because the nerves have been killed, but pain often arises from adjacent skin. These burns heal very slowly, and only if they are very small and the skin can grow from the edges. Otherwise, they don't close without surgery. There's no time to lose when you suffer a burn. For a minor burn on a small area of skin, Dr. Ryan advised running cool water over it for 20 minutes, which can help limit damage. Then apply petroleum jelly or antibiotic cream like Neosporin or Bacitracin, all available over the counter, and cover the burn with a bandage. If a blister develops, leave it alone. Don't pop it. Dab antibacterial cream on it, cover it with the bandage, and get to your doctor as soon as you can. For a second-degree burn that's larger than a deck of cards, get to your doctor immediately or go to an emergency room. And if you have a first or second-degree burn on a large area of the body, like from a bathing accident, don't immerse yourself in cool water. That might cause hypothermia. Stay warm and call 911 immediately. Call 911 for second-degree burns to the face, hands, feet, or genitals, and for all third-degree burns. The treatment they receive in the first hours is critical. Keep in mind that open burns, especially deep second-degree burns and all third-degree burns, are at risk for becoming infected. Your doctor may prescribe dressings and ointments to prevent infection and promote healing. Or you might be referred to a hospital burn center. Here are some important steps. If you have an oxygen tank in your home, keep it maintained and make sure any smoking occurs far from the tank. When cooking, use side-by-side burners rather than front and back burners. Don't wear loose sleeves. Use a microwave when possible. And consider getting an induction stove, which heats cookware with a magnetic field. Don't set your water heater above 120. Consider checking the temperature of your bath water with a thermometer before getting into it. Be especially careful when children are near. Put an ice cube into hot soup. Allow heated baby formula to cool. Unplug treadmills that can cause friction burns, and turn off or block the fireplace. Preventing even one burn, Dr. Ryan says, is a better outcome than anything I can fix. Now let's go back to the Harvard Women's Health Watch of July 2023, and the lead article is entitled, Not Your Stereotypical Addict. Opioid abuse and death among older adults have skyrocketed. Could you have a problem and not know it? You've had a stressful few months. Major surgery led to lingering pain worsened by vague anxiety, the unsettled sense you aren't quite back to normal. Your pain has subsided, but you've decided to ask your doctor for another refill of your opioid painkiller. Just a little longer, just until the nerves shake out, you think. Seems harmless enough, right? But staying on opioids to allay anxiety rather than pain is a slippery slope. It's also one of the most common ways well-meaning people slide into opioid addiction, formerly called opioid use disorder, a problem responsible for 3/4 of the nation's overdose deaths. In contrast to drug addiction stereotypes, astounding numbers of people with opioid use are older adults. People over 60 are the largest users of prescription opioids in the United States, with women outpacing men, according to the CDC. And the toll is stunning. Opioid use disorder in adults 65 and older more than tripled between 2013 and 2018, while opioid-related deaths among Americans 55 and older increased nearly 19-fold between 1999 and 2019, according to the 2022 study published in JAMA Network Open. One question to ask yourself is, if I didn't have pain, would I still have the desire to take these medications? If the answer is yes, that raises serious concerns, says Dr. Christopher Gilligan, Associate Chief Medical Officer at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. You may not realize that you have an opioid problem. Someone who continually seeks opioid refills, asks for higher doses, or tries to obtain prescriptions from multiple doctors is probably also in trouble. If she comes up with excuses like, I lost it, or someone took it, or asked me if I can help her get more, those are not good indicators, says Dr. Robert Jameson, a clinical psychologist and professor of anesthesia at Brigham and Women's Hospital Pain Management Center. A class of pain relievers also called narcotics or opiates. Opioids include some familiar names. In addition to the illicit street drug heroin, often laced with fentanyl, prescription versions include morphine, hydrocodone, short-acting or long-acting oxycodone, sometimes called OxyContin, tramadol, and hydromorphone, sometimes called Dilaudid. They're typically prescribed to treat pain after surgery or injury, or extreme chronic pain from diabetic neuropathy, arthritis, or cancer. While opioids carry indisputable dangers, they're not necessarily a bad thing, Dr. Jameson says. They're some of the best medications we have to manage postoperative pain. Quieting pain after surgery is really important, and opioids can do that. But certain factors can make someone susceptible to misusing opioids. You're more at risk if you smoke cigarettes, have anxiety, depression, or another mood disorder, or have a family or personal history of abusing substances, including alcohol. Baby boomers who overdose on opioids often used drugs recreationally when they were younger and kept it up, according to the 2022 study in JAMA Network Open. Pandemic pressures and limitations imposed by health insurance companies have shortened hospital stays for many joint replacement patients who may return home in significant pain and in turn may take more opioids than they would under close medical monitoring, Dr. Jameson says. People who take opioids for chronic pain conditions can develop tolerance, meaning the same dosage provides less relief. Then they might start taking more, Dr. Jameson says. Seeking treatment for opioid use disorder doesn't carry the stigma it once did. Treatment is common and reflects the understanding that opioid use disorder is just as much a disease as diabetes or high blood pressure. Often, treatment blends behavioral therapies with medications like buprenorphine, Butrans, naltrexone, Vivitrol, or a combination of buprenorphine and naloxone, which is called Suboxone, which work by binding to the same pain receptors as opioids, easing the cravings. It's ideal, of course, to prevent opioid use from ever slipping into misuse, and Dr. Gilligan and Dr. Jameson suggest several strategies. Take opioids for the shortest possible time. Use them for only a few days or less and at the lowest possible dose before switching to a non-opioid over-the-counter pain reliever like Advil, Tylenol, or naproxen called Aleve. Tap a non-opioid option. You can turn down opioids if offered after a minor procedure like dental work. For longer-lasting pain, certain medications used for other conditions can provide notable relief. These include the antidepressant duloxetine or Cymbalta, as well as the anti-seizure drugs pregabalin or Lyrica and gabapentin or Graylase. If you could achieve pain control with zero opioids, your risks are typically much lower. Try alternative approaches for pain relief. Comfort measures like heat, ice, and massage all make a difference. So too can complementary therapies like deep breathing, mindful meditation, and acupuncture. Cognitive behavioral therapy can also be very helpful in coming off medications. Wean off opioids slowly and with a doctor's guidance. Abruptly stopping opioids can trigger a temporary pain flare-up and bring on other withdrawal symptoms like nausea and sweating. Continual monitoring and gradual tapering is helpful. Discuss pain relief before you need it. If you're scheduled for surgery, ask your care team what type of pain measures are appropriate, including regional anesthesia that can block pain. Many different pathways can reduce opioid use after surgery while still delivering pain control. The article also points out that joint replacement patients prescribed fewer doses of opioids after surgery don't require more refills than those whose prescription included a greater number of pills. And this was shown in a recent research study. That study bolstered evidence indicating doctors can prescribe smaller amounts of opioids without sacrificing pain control. Smaller prescriptions lower the chance that patients will have leftover opioids in their home after recovery, potentially tempting them or others to abuse the medication. We're recognizing that prescribing excess opioids after surgery inadvertently increases the problem of other people obtaining the medication, leading to misuse, says Dr. Gilligan. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Yunkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.